Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He is just an obsessive goal scorer.
They have to understand I chose to stay in my country because I'm French.
I haven't got a problem with soccer, to be fair.
Football.
Into the area to Bamba! Oh, what a start!
Well, what I can guarantee to you is that they want to keep everything secret.
Oh, yes! It is final time! Once again, and we begin with the Europa League final of all the finals. We should actually rename this one the Sevilla Cup Final, because once again, Sevilla get the job done against AS Roma. Welcome, everybody. Myself, Ian Joy, alongside my co-host, Michael LaHood, today. Mike, before we go any further, we got to touch upon it. The game finished 1-1. Great goal from Paulo Dybala. Then we got the own goal from Mancini. It takes a miracle to score against Mourinho, apparently, in Cup Finals. But we did get an extra long Cup Final that went to penalty kicks. Your thoughts?
This was only going to go one way. It was only going to go to extra time and eventually penalty kicks. I said it. Jonathan Johnson said it. Nigel Coker did not say it. We all said Roma was going to win. We were proven wrong today. I want to definitely get back to the NRC comment. But this is what we expect from these two teams, though. Defensive-minded approach from both teams. In the first half, it was Roma. They're on the offensive. And then Sevilla, they figured it out. Subs change games, and the subs change this match.
Let's discuss first and foremost the actual surprise inclusion. I would say it was a surprise inclusion of Paulo Dybala. He is only the second foreign player to score in a major European Cup final for AS Roma after Pedro Manfredini. He scored a brace in the First Cup in 1961 against Birmingham. He got his opening goal 34 minutes into this game. His 17th across all competitions, 5th in the Europa League, assisted by Mancini, who eventually went on to score that own goal. But was this a surprise inclusion for you? I expected Tammy to start up top there. I thought maybe what they would do is put Dybala on the bench and have him to be maybe an explosive player going into extra time, as we all predicted it would. But this was a surprise to see him start. Maybe glad he was.
I think I was expecting it to be Wijnaldum to get the start. Coming into this match, he'd been carrying a bit of an injury, limited minutes. He barely played in the semifinal second leg against Leverkusen, and they were resting him for this big moment. Mourinho looked like a genius. He went in the media and had said he was only going to play a few minutes. And then, in classic Mourinho fashion, rewrote the script, started Dybala. He cashed in with a well-taken goal. And in that goal, on that finish, the first touch is everything. World-class strikers, they do the little things well. And when that ball gets slotted in from Mancini, Dybala's first touch creates that separation, and he does the rest, slotting it in the bottom corner from the onrushing Bono.
Well, first 45 minutes, and actually even go earlier than that one, the first 30 minutes of this game up until we actually got that goal, there was only two shots in the game, which was actually quite surprising. So when the game did open up, obviously 30 minutes into this game, Roma were looking the better side here. They were starting to play some good football. Sevilla, you would expect them to counter. They did so, but not many shots, not many opportunities. It was a tight affair. There was a few first half yellow cards as well, which caught me by surprise. Even one of the players, Rafa Mir, who wasn't even on the pitch, I think he got a yellow card. He was on the bench. But yeah, surprising first 45 minutes overall.
Yeah, and I was surprised at how kind of lame Sevilla were. They look shell-shocked with how Roma came and pressed. Roma, so far in this tournament, they've really sat in a low block, and they let teams make mistakes and then hit them on the counter or hit them on set pieces. But Mourinho surprised everyone by being on the front foot, and it was snuffing out passing lanes. A little tactical wrinkle I noticed was Ivan Rakitic was a ghost. Anytime the ball went into him, Nemanja Matic, Cristante were stepping out of midfield, almost man-marking him. But everything changed a bit. Sevilla got a lifeline right before halftime when Rakitic got that left-footed bomb, absolute pill of a shot that hit the post. And I think that gave him a bit of a sniff going into the locker room.
So, okay, they go into the locker room. That was, and I agree with you, that was an opportunity right there for them to really maybe gain some confidence. There was obviously a ton of added time in that first 45 minutes as well before they did get into the locker room. There was a ton of added time everywhere across this field with the English referee. But then they came out in the second half. They made a couple of changes, which really caught me by surprise. Eric Lamela and Suso came on, and pretty much as far as I'm concerned, tempo really changed. Direction of the game changed. Tactically, it sort of changed for Sevilla. And you have to give Mendilibar a lot of credit for making changes at halftime in a cup final, because you don't know if it's going to go to extra time. You have no idea if you're going to get a goal in the second half. Maybe you're pushing for that win in the second half. But two changes like that at halftime kind of caught me by surprise.
It didn't catch me by surprise. I was surprised he didn't make it sooner because they were getting bullied. I think of the likes of Brian Hill, Oliver Torres, this was not the match for them. And we saw a glimpse of this against Juventus in the second leg when these are the two players that came on and absolutely changed the game. They're more dynamic. They're stronger on the ball. And a big question mark for AS Roma, they have an old experienced midfield who do not run well. They're not the most mobile side. Suso dictated the game. Lamela, good 1v1 players on the dribble. They can create their own shots, create their own space. And as soon as they got on the field, you saw Jesus Navas getting to the byline a bit more. In the first half, it was static. Navas looked like one of the worst players on the field. It was pedestrian. Every time he got the ball, he felt scared and just lumped the ball in the box to the single striker in the box, El Nesri.
I'm going to start throwing in a few comments here, Mike, as we go along, because obviously there's a lot to go through in this game. We're not going to make it an hour-long show this time around. It'll be a lot shorter, even though we probably should make it a two-day show, considering this game almost took us about 3 days. Jonathan Johnson, in our private conversation on WhatsApp, was brilliant. He said, in Europe, this game started last month and ended in June, which is absolutely hilarious. Amy jumping in and saying, oh my God, as an Italian-American, it is embarrassing loss. Jose, horrible manager. You put three defenders in a row. For PK, we'll discuss that a little bit later on. Vic jumping in and saying Roma, and then he also said, Amy, that's an awful assessment. Just disagreeing a little bit with you, Amy, right there. Steve jumping in and saying Sevilla is the Real Madrid of the Europa League. I mean, think again, Sevilla are one and only when it comes to this competition. Vic cashing some money with me on the bets. Thank you very much, Vic, for always following my content across the board. And Matt jumping in and saying, really glad for Sevilla, especially Mendilibar, who is really solid. Understated manager, what a rescue job. Forgetting the fact that they are absolutely miserable when it comes to domestic football. All right, we go into the second half. They do get the equalizing goal. It took 55 minutes on the clock before them to get a goal. 10 minutes into the second period, Mike, when they get the own goal, thanks to Gianluca Mancini. It was a great ball into the box. Very difficult to defend. You've been in that position yourself defensively. It's not easy to stop those crosses. Very, very difficult. And little stat here for you before you comment on it. Gianluca Mancini is the first player to score against Jose Mourinho's side, in a European club tournament final since Henrik Larsson did it in 2003. It did take something special. It did take something different. And unfortunately for Roma fans, it was an own goal.
I think the difference when that cross went in the first half, El Nesri was isolated. It was 1v3. Chris Smalling is one of the best defenders in Serie A in the air, and it was well documented by the Paramount Plus crew. When you get players around him, and we've seen this in the buildup to this final, where Sevilla were deadly in the second leg. Lamela scores because he's in the box. El Nesri makes beautiful runs in the box to drag two or three defenders with him. You have to have runs from midfield to make it more disruptive. And it was Lucas Ocampos who makes that near post run. It disrupts Smalling, gets him out of the game, and creates a 1v1 matchup. And anything can happen when you're a defender, and lots of bad things tend to happen as a defender running towards your own goal with a ball fizzed in like that. The interchange between Suso and Lamela, that was the key that changed momentum for Sevilla.
Yeah, it was kind of a fun watch, really, when you look at it after they changed it. There was a higher tempo to the way Sevilla were playing their game. Obviously, you got to give a bit of credit to the way he made the changes at halftime and how he handled the game in Dilibar in that second half. And actually, would have to say this, Jose Mourinho actually had to tactically maneuver a little bit in that second period as well, just to make sure that they didn't lose that game in the second half. And I thought they did a good job there. And as you mentioned, now you thought Wijnaldum was actually going to be the one who started this game. He came on 68 minutes into the game, as did Belotti. He came on 75 minutes into this game as well. So tactically, I think he read the script here, Jose Mourinho. If he wasn't going to make changes an hour into this game, he was going to lose the game.
I think when you see those two changes, it was to clamp down in midfield. As soon as Dybala and Tammy Abraham got tired, these are two players who were putting in an absolute shift on both sides of the ball. In the first half, I think Paulo Dybala led the team in blocked shots. That is one of your star strikers and attackers, leading goal scorer in this competition, blocking shots as well as creating chances in the final thirds. And that creates more space for Fernando and Rakitic. Dictated a bit too much. They overloaded midfield. And as soon as Wijnaldum came in, Belotti came in, they upped their threat on set pieces. Roma's two dangerous chances in the second half came off the Tammy Abraham chance, which I don't know how Bono got a hand to that. And then the Belotti chance, as soon as he came on, that's a world-class save. Gets his fingertips on that to preserve Sevilla going into the 90 minutes.
Yeah, really incredible performance from Bono once again. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Amy jumped in and once again, she said Bono MVP for Sevilla in that game there. And realistically, a couple of the saves, and even on the penalty kick as well. Oh. I mean, absolutely outstanding saves. I mean, just the fingertips was all it took. And sometimes you don't see the movement of the ball. You don't see what the fingertips actually does to the ball. But it does make a bit of a difference. It slows the ball down, the trajectory of the ball. It definitely changes, even if it's just a fingertip to the ball. So goalkeeper, obviously outstanding in a World Cup with Morocco as well, deserves a lot of credit here. I agree with you, Matt. I'm only having some fun here when I said Mendilibar doesn't get his credit. He has got a team who are mid-table in La Liga. Yes, away from that relegation trouble, very fortunately so, because it is a scrap in the league at the bottom of the table. But credit to him for the way he's managed to now lift the trophy and take Sevilla. Mike, I can't believe I'm saying this. Into the Champions League. Before we discuss that just a little bit further, let's get into the extra time. So, of course, the game was going towards extra time. Now, we did see some more changes from both sides, more heated reaction there. I want to actually get your opinion on the referee, and everybody out there joining the conversation as much as you possibly can, because the referee went to video review multiple times in this game. If I'm not mistaken, it was three, maybe four. Was it four times he went to video review?
Yeah, I counted three.
Three. Okay, so video review on penalty kicks as well. Was there any one decision that video review and the referee got wrong, in your opinion?
It's got to be that penalty kick call that was turned over. I know I saw on Twitter, I know in our group chat, we went back and forth, but I didn't get to see some of the other added angles that the broadcast team and other people got to see. But all the angles I saw, contact is contact. In the box. As a defender, you should never be lunging in like that when you get beat. You have Chris Smalling coming over. I think Ibanez, that was a rash challenge by him. And I think the referee got that wrong. And maybe it was Ocampo selling it a bit more. Maybe he could have stayed on his feet. I think maybe that's what he saw. Different interpretations based on different leagues. I could see that being given in La Liga. I've seen it given in different leagues. But I think the referee did not want to err on the side of controversy. And then he said, you know what? Let me play this game on and live to fight another day.
The only way I can see, because I agree with you, I think it could have been a penalty kick. It probably should have been a penalty kick. But as I have not seen multiple replays like they have, the video review have that benefit, I didn't see if there was a touch on the ball. Because as far as I'm concerned, if the defender just touches the ball a little bit there, that to me is not enough for a penalty kick there. Because the ball and making contact on the ball is the biggest difference with that challenge. You make contact, just the slightest of contacts on the ball, no penalty kick. And maybe that's what they saw. I think Matteo Bonetti on the call actually said that he saw the replay, even though we didn't get to see it once again. Yeah. He saw the replay, and that's why the penalty kick wasn't a given. Overall assessment from the referee's performance, how he handled Jose Mourinho, the technical staff. I mean, we had two people who were off the field who got yellow cards in this game. It was a bit wild for Anthony Taylor.
It was always going to be wild with Jose Mourinho, especially after Sevilla got that tying goal. It's the dark arts. It's the antics. It's the showmanship. I give him an A for how he did not let that be the biggest talking point of that. I remember taking a screenshot and sharing it with some of my friends. I was almost going to put it in our group chat of just, can I say shithousery? I'm going to say it till big news airs. It was absolute shithousery from both teams. Picking on things. And then the players standing on the field every 2 minutes, players were grappling. But as a referee, you have to keep the calm and keep the focus on the game. I think he did that.
Yeah, he did. And he tried to, right? It's very difficult to do. And this is, you know, I am not someone who can sit here and say, hey, you know what? It's easy for a referee. A referee has an easy job, because it's not. And nowadays, more than I can ever remember, maybe not so much, maybe I'm bullshitting myself here, but referees are surrounded by almost every single goddamn player that's on the pitch. Like, when every decision, it could be a small foul, asking for yellow cards, like, surrounded by the referee. I mean, I have in my time seen one or two players try to get in the face of the referee, and I've seen some crazy stuff, and the game has obviously changed. But the referee has to have maybe a bit more power in getting people away from him. He needs a bit more help there, because Pellegrini, Mancini, it was certainly the Roma players who were in the face of the referee a lot more. What about Mourinho on the sidelines? Your thoughts before we discuss the extra time and then go to break. What did you think about Mourinho on the sidelines? He felt hard done by, I think.
Yeah, of course, he's always going to feel hard done by unless he gets the winning result. I loved the fact that the broadcast crew and the directors and the producers, they had Mourinho cam. That's the best thing I've seen since a tactical cam in the UEFA Champions League. Give me more of that, please. Some of the highest profile managers. I hope they do that in the Champions League final with Pep Guardiola, because when you have a very charismatic, when you have an animated manager, that is part of the game. That is part of the stuff I want to see. But one thing I did see, with so much focus on Mourinho, I saw panic. I saw him looking around and recognizing, oh boy, I don't have the depth. I don't have the bench that I thought I would have in a high proportion match like this. And that's what cost them. Not a lot of depth and injuries at the wrong time of the season going into a final.
I don't know if I agree with you on the depth there. If you think of the players that they brought off the bench, Mike, I mean, these are players who are difference maker. You bring Wijnaldum off the bench. He's obviously had some injury issues, but he's still a player who probably should have started this game. You bring Belotti off the bench, who maybe should have started the game in place of Dybala, with Dybala coming off the bench. You bring Zalewski on the game, who is a bit of a game changer. Diego Rente, and then El Shaarawy, who came off the bench. And I think Bove came off as well, just an 120-minute mark right there. Before we do go into penalty kicks, which I want to do on the other side of the break, I want to just touch upon the fact that extra time took place, and extra time was probably the longest extra time I've ever seen in my life. And at one point we had stoppage time in the first half of extra time, and then we had stoppage time post in the second half of extra time. I actually went and had a look, and it said that what was the longest football match in recorded history, because we were getting to the point where I was saying that this is 3 hours long, guys. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. And apparently the longest football match recorded in history was a showdown between English club Stockport County and Doncaster Rovers at Edgeley Park back in March 30th, 1946, around the time that producer Des was born. The duration of that match was a remarkable 3 hours and 23 minutes, and a world record has stood for over half a century. We were over 3 hours by the time that first penalty kick was taken. Wow. But extra time itself was pretty much a bore fest, both teams looking for the opportunity. We did get the crossbar at the end from Roma. Oof. They pushed a little bit to try and get it. But there was, you know, not much action in that extra time.
No, Eric Lamela was doing his best to try and gift Roma set piece opportunities, just rash challenge after rash challenge, something that got him and landed the move to Sevilla, because he was doing that when he was playing for Tottenham Hotspurs. Not the player that you want on the field rushing to tackle someone in his own defensive third. Roma, they were playing for set pieces. They were playing for their lives. When you have a player like Chris Smalling, when you have the three big center backs in your arsenal, you have a chance. And I wonder if you had started Belotti and brought Tammy Abraham off the bench, and you have Abraham in the mix when that ball hit the crossbar, if it's a different headline.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We did put out a question there for a lot of people to jump in. How would you rate the referee's official? Rafa Cardenas jumping in and saying, I'd give them an 8 for officiating out of 10. Not too bad. Amy would also give an 8. She also mentioned to say the EPL officials were better for this match than they are for the EPL matches, was an interesting comment, asking if they were microphoned up, which I think it needs to happen at some point. We get to hear what's communicating between the referees. You go to video review 3 times in a cup final. We want to hear what you're saying. What are you discussing? Even now, we're doing a show post-game. We still don't know why that penalty kick wasn't given. We need to hear what they're seeing so that we can make a judgment for ourselves. And then she also mentioned, Amy, that she'd give Sevilla fans 10 for celebrating on the pitch with them as well. I'd give them a 0. Get off the pitch. There's no place for you to be on a pitch in a European Cup final. Sorry, Amy, to disagree with you, where most of the time I agree with you. We got another great comment coming in from Rafa. He says, please, please, please talk about Roma's penalty pecking order. Oh, is Mourinho to blame for that? Well, Mike, before we get there, we're going to take a quick break because this has been the full 90 minutes. We've gone into extra time, and when we come back, we're going to discuss the penalty kick shootout and how Sevilla got the job done in the Europa League final.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Welcome back into House of Champions, everybody. Ian Joy and Michael Lute just got caught out there right there. You're in a hotel room right now. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Cary, North Carolina. A little surprise in the, you know, in the works. I will be calling a new tournament on Peacock. You know, not cheating on you guys. Just getting called in. Late sub called the soccer tournament. Starts tomorrow. You can catch it. Coming soon.
7v7 tournament, I hear. Is that right?
A little 7v7, yeah. First of its kind. Got some heavy hitters. I'm surprised Ian Paul Joy is in the mixer. You still icing the hammies?
Certainly no chance of me ever putting the boots back on after what happened in Hamburg the last time. Let's get back into it, Michael Lude. Yes, of course, it is the Europa League final. It went to penalty kicks. We have gone through the 90 minutes and the extra time. Now we have to discuss what happened in the penalty kicks, Mike. This was incredible. It was the first time a UEFA Cup Europa League in history, it's gone three finals in a row to extra time, and three finals have gone straight to penalty kicks as well. So it was inevitable that this one was also going to go to penalty kicks. But what about Roma's pecking order? Defender, defender, defender. First three penalty kicks makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, I was watching the post-game show, and Charlie Davies had mentioned the importance of making sure your best penalty kick takers take the first one, and how everyone should know how to take a penalty kick. You ask a defender to take a penalty kick, I'll tell you straight now, I was terrible at taking penalty kicks. Defenders, most of the time, are not great unless, you know, you're lucky you have a top player who's a goal scorer as well. I was not that. Most defenders are not that. So did it catch you by surprise that Roma put those three players up first?
Absolutely. I was waiting for Belotti to be the first one. He's taken pens when he was the captain and the main man at Torino. I don't know why. And we've seen it in previous finals where teams lose when it counts the most is when your players that you're looking to, especially if you're a defender or midfielder and you've done the work, you're teeing it up for some of your attacking players and players who have been there and done that to go, okay, step in. Here's your chance. You're coming in extra time to be ready for penalty kicks. You got to raise your hand. Even if the manager, as a player, I've been there as a player in penalty kick shootouts. As a manager, if you have it in your heart that you want, or as a manager, as a player, if you have it in your heart that you want to take a penalty kick, even if the manager says, okay, this is the allotted, raise your hand and risk it. That is why you're there. I don't think these guys have the guts or else they would have taken it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, penalty kicks are totally different here. I'm just going to run through the pecking order of how the penalty kicks were taken. Obviously, Sevilla got to take first, which Lucas Ocampos put in the back of the net there. Brian Cristante made it 1-1. Eric Lamela made it 2-1 before Gianluca Mancini missed his penalty kick. There's another defender stepping up there to take a penalty kick. Ivan Rakitic made it 3-1 before Roger Ibanez missed his penalty kick. Now, obviously, you're looking at just that goal for Sevilla to win the PK shootout. And Montiel, and you've got a little stat for us on Montiel. TL as well. He is familiar to taking penalty kicks and he won it for Sevilla.
Yeah, I remember 6 months ago we were doing the World Cup final. It was the greatest final we've ever seen in the FIFA World Cup. Well, Montiel was the same player who scored the decisive winning penalty kick for Argentina, the defending and current world champions. He steps up again today. And I think our producer, Des Norris, we were going back and forth. I'm not sure if he went fourth that day or fifth, but it still takes a decisive one. This guy has ice in his veins, and he was given a bit of a gift for the VAR recall for, I think it was Rui Patricio. It stopped off his line, and he gets it and punishes it for the winner.
Producer Des already jumping in. I think he actually stated this earlier on, Mike, that he did go fourth in Qatar. So maybe that's like a superstition number for him right there. A chance to win the competition, maybe if you go fourth, but also a chance for your team to stay in it if you go fourth and somebody's coming after you to save your ass as well. So congratulations. Listen, we have to hand it to Sevilla. The way they handle these competitions has been phenomenal to watch. Going into it, just brilliant. We all saw the statistics with Mourinho in European competition. He was also trying to become the first coach to try and win this competition with three different clubs. Quite crazy. But to see Sevilla win it yet again, a couple of stats for you here. Sevilla have won 7 major European title to date, with each one coming in the UEFA Cup or Europa League. Only 5 sides have more European trophies: Real Madrid, Barcelona, Milan, Liverpool, and Bayern Munich, which is absolutely incredible. You got a stat, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Stat within that, in their last few UEFA Cup or Europa League titles, they've had to come from behind in each and every single one of them, except for one. And that was the 0-0 draw where they won on penalty kicks. So this is a team that's built with resilience. Doesn't matter the manager, doesn't matter the group. There is just something about this tournament where they're willing to stick in it. But I thought that was the most interesting stat at all. This isn't a group or a team or an organization or a club that panics. And I think it's down to the fans. I think it's down to that history and that desire to keep history going.
Well, speaking of history, Spanish teams have won the last 18 major European finals in which they have faced a non-Spanish opponent, stretching back to Real Madrid's win over Leverkusen in 2002 UEFA Champions League final. If I'm not mistaken, that final was in Hamburg. Maybe producer Des can confirm or deny if that was Detroit. Was that the one with Zidane when he...
Is it might Hamburg? Have been
Zidane, was it?
Yeah, it was is that Hampden Park?
Hampden, yeah. I think, was that the Zidane goal Hampden, where he volleyed it?
Yeah, Carlos down the left. Ball in the air, snow cap on the ball. Zidane drops his right shoulder. Bang.
Hey, Mike, we're going to discuss just a little bit more on this game before we chat what's next for Mourinho and also with Sevilla. They've got one more game left to go. Both clubs do. Also hearing rumors about Mourinho's future. But before we do move on there, producer Des has jumped in and said we are correct. It was Hampden when Zidane scored that goal. Let's get to some of the comments right here. Matt jumping in and saying Roma forward should have stepped up. No guts, no glory. Always the case when you get to a final. But I think that comes down to the tactics, the tactical approach from Mourinho. Sometimes you hold your players back, and substitutions and tactical approach in the second half meant that Roma had to change their tactics to actually stay in the game. RM Zidane says, how much does the winner of Europa League get in prize money? Which is a great, great conversation to have. I don't know exact number as money, but if you think now they get a place in the Champions League, that comes with a considerable large amount of money for each game. Obviously, attendances, it is a ton of money as well. Question here from Damir, he's asking, penalty in the second half of Roma, was it handball or was it not handball there, Mike? You remember the one?
Yeah.
Defender in the box, went to video review, thoughts?
I thought the referee made the right call. I think it would have been a very harsh. It's consistency. If you're going to make a gutsy call like you did on the no PK call, you got to keep it consistent with that. Would have been harsh. Yes, his arms are a little bit out, but it's a natural movement. It's not like his arms are way out here. He's just a couple, maybe a couple millimeters, centimeters away from his body. I don't think that was a penalty.
All right, let's discuss, before we get into Sevilla and the champions of the Europa League once again, let's discuss Jose Mourinho and what's next for Roma. They do have a game coming up here. Obviously, Champions League now is out for them. No chance of competing in the Champions League, which means we will not have five Italian clubs in the Champions League as well next season. It'll be just the four. But at the same time, I think we have to applaud what Mourinho has done getting this club to yet again another final. What's next for him, though, Mike? We're starting to hear a lot of rumors. PSG are heating up, obviously. They would love to have Jose Mourinho. I'm sure he would probably be a very good fit for them. He'd be back in the Champions League with them as well. What do you think would be the best decision for Roma, for Mourinho, and also for PSG? Is he the right man?
Well, I was thinking of what I'd call this had he won, but he lost. The special one is now the defeated one, something we did not think we'd see in our House of Champions crew. But it's the truth. It's part of the headlines. It goes next to Sevilla, seventh heaven. They've done it again. Should probably do that for a living, coming up with headlines. But I'll sidebar with you on that, Ian. For Mourinho himself, I was torn with this when I read that the rumors are heating up with him and PSG. And when I let's talk about that. When I look at the positives of it, PSG are a team, they're in absolute turmoil. They have a manager in Gauthier they don't respect. Messi, Neymar, they went and did their own thing. And as players, that's a sign of disrespect to the manager. It's him and Campos that have butting of the head. So they need someone that has the gravitas to command the respect of the likes of Mbappe and some of the other players that we know 100% will be there. If Neymar's there next year, we'll see. Rumors that he might be on the way out. But if he's there next year, that's a positive he brings. A negative in that is Mourinho, he demands total control where he goes. In clubs where he didn't have total control, I think of Tottenham Hotspurs, I think of it Man United. Yes, trophies were brought to it United, but the relationship soured, just like we saw at Madrid. He needs an Inter Milan. He needs a Chelsea at the start before things soured with him. This is an immediate impact sort of thing. The best thing that could happen for PSG if they bring Mourinho, his specialty is not domestic, it is cup competition. You're bringing him knowing that most likely he'll give you Ligue 1, but he will make you more competitive and more difficult to play against in the bigger matches in the Champions League.
Yeah, I agree with you. Bruno Sadesh jumped back into our private chat and said, according to some reports today, today's results will have a major bearing on his chances of getting that PSG job, which I didn't know. Thank you to Bruno Sadesh for jumping in. Here's my two cents on there. And like everybody else out there who's watching the show, to let us know what you think about Jose Mourinho going to Paris Saint-Germain. If that does turn out to be the case, would he be a good fit for PSG? Let us know your thoughts there. And we'll try to share them on the show before we close out here. Jose Mourinho at his age has had tremendous amount of success. Clearly in European competition, we recognize it, this being the first European final that he's lost, which is a sad way to say it. But maybe it's time for a new challenge for Jose Mourinho at this stage in his life. What does he look for? He looks for power. You're right. He looks for control. I think he's looking for a project now. And with PSG and their president or owner, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, jumping out recently and saying that he is going to change the whole philosophy and take the power away from the players and start to build a project that is the proper project for the development for PSG, not only for success in the Champions League domestically, but producing young talent and also trying to win games consistently when it comes to European competition. I think that the project, I think the money, I think everything, the city, the bright lights, the domestic success that he will have, it's right time for Jose Mourinho. Ooh. I think this job would be the real deal for him. I really do, because Roma's a great fit for him. It's a passionate city, passionate supporters, great. He's obviously had success with Italian clubs before, and I'm actually enjoying watching what he's doing with Roma. I think they kind of threw away a Champions League spot this year because of what happened with Juve. They were, you know, focused on finishing fifth, where he changed his team, recognizing that the Europa League might be their only place to get into a Champions League spot. If they win that competition, they then go. So he was changing his teams and manipulating his starting 11, dropping points. Like, they didn't win, I think, any of the last, six games domestically, which is ridiculous. So now, to go back into the Champions League, to have endless amounts of money, to get paid endless amounts of money, to be living in Paris, to immediately be back on the spotlight,
it fits for Jose Mourinho. And he gets to manipulate the way this story ends for PSG in the Champions League. I rest my case. Your thoughts?
You're making me more of a believer than I was when I first heard the rumors. I think it's going to come down to what are some of the other offers. Mourinho is always someone who's on the radar for a lot of clubs. And we know this summer is going to be a blockbuster summer because we're expecting big money moves for a lot of high level players. I think Mourinho and PSG, one thing we know about Mourinho, when he takes a project with most clubs, Roma is a bit of an asterisk in that because of the budget.
I agree.
He spends a lot of money. So he will need to go to a club where if he wants to make it in his image, he's going to need an owner that he could say, hey, write me a blank check. He had that at Chelsea, did wonders for him. Madrid, obviously, did wonders. If he went to PSG, there is no check that he couldn't cash to get the right players. And a lot of players still will come play for Jose Mourinho. He still has that allure.
Yeah, I would say this, and you can see this fabulous comment right there if you're watching. If you're not watching, you listen to the podcast. Mourinho on Roma's top four chances. We can write history and want to continue doing it, but qualifying for the Champions League when spending $7 million on the transfer market is more than history, more than a miracle. It is like Jesus Christ coming to Rome and having a walk around the Vatican. That is Jose Mourinho in a nutshell. Can I just say this, though, and I hope you agree with me, Mike, that if Jose did leave now after this final game of the season, he'd leave a bit of a legend at Roma. I think the fans adore him. I think the players have enjoyed, and Tammy Abraham has certainly been a better player under Jose Mourinho at Roma, as far as I'm concerned. It was a little bit unfortunate that he didn't win that final this time, because he would have won the last three European finals, Champions League, Europa Conference League, and then the Europa League, which would have been an incredible story to talk about. But Jose Mourinho, legend at Roma if he does leave.
Absolutely. This is a club that's had a history and reputation for finishing second best. They were always the team that couldn't get it done at the very end, and they get into back-to-back finals in two different competitions because of Jose Mourinho. This is a Roma team that without Mourinho, they're not even here. Look at how they got it done. It was down to his tactics. It was a belief in the plan. And if he leaves, this is a Roma side, a Roma fan base that will be in absolute disarray.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. And I'll be questioning who would be the next person to come into a Roma. And let's not forget that there is a man who just left Naples with a championship who surely might not be a bad fit right there after a little break. Maybe it's not a break. Maybe the rumors are already starting to circle. I'm just going to throw it out there. Would he go to Roma? I don't know. Of course, we're talking about Spalletti.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, speaking of legends and obviously leaving a legacy, Jose Luis Mendilibar, what he has done for Sevilla, pretty much rescuing them at the bottom of La Liga, but also rejuvenating their players. I thought their performance against Juventus in the semi-final were fabulous watching them to get to that final. So to now get into a final, go behind, come back, and then win on penalty kicks, he has made history with this club. I mean, outstanding job he has done.
I don't want to be a Rio Ferdinand on House of Champions and say what he said when Ole beat PSG, but I'm going to be Rio Ferdinand, and I'm going to be the Mike Lahoud of House of Champions. Forget Rio. Give the man whatever he wants. Get the checkbook out, and it may not be the biggest checkbook, but this is your manager moving forward. He's in the Champions League. He got you here. I think it would be cruel. Barring a big transfer that comes in or a big offer from someone else, teams will go after this guy because he's an absolute miracle worker. He instilled humility and hard work in ways that they were lost with this Sevilla side from the previous managers. He got players, aging players, to buy back in and play their roles in ways that I hadn't seen from them throughout the Champions League and La Liga. And you saw the way that when he took over in the knockout stages, the players were starting to arrive. you know, Al-Nesyri scoring his goals. Ocampos looking like the Ocampos that was on the Argentine national team. Eric Lamela winding back the clock. And Ivan Rakitic doing what he does best, dictating the play. And obviously, Bono standing on his head and giving them a UEFA, or UEFA, I almost said UEFA Conference League, a UEFA Europa League title.
Yeah, here, listen, I just went up and looked up his statistics since taking over the club. Obviously, they were desperate. He has been in charge of now 16 games since he took over Sevilla. Guess how many he's lost in those 16?
Ooh, is it the one? Or no?
Two.
The Real Madrid, I know for sure. Two.
He lost two games only. He lost two games in La Liga. From 11 games, he won six, drew three, lost two, and gathered up 21 points for them, which kept them away from safety. I think they're, what, about 7 points now or 6 points away from the relegation trouble, which is absolutely mad in La Liga, by the way, if everybody goes out there and takes a look. And in Europa League, he won three and drew two games in the Europa League and, of course, just picked up the final as well. So legendary statistics right there to basically really continue what has been a remarkable story. Final word on Sevilla before we get the hell out of here. Michael, Sevilla winning yet again another Europa League title, and Mendilibar being the first coach to beat Jose Mourinho in a European final. Outstanding.
It's hard to bet against history. This was the final that was written in the stars. And the most humble character, yes, Mourinho, there was so much about this that was Jose Mourinho, but the better team won at the end. The team that made the right tactical adjustment, the team that had the longer game plan over the course of 120 minutes and penalty kicks, and the team that had the players who were willing to step up and put their huevos on the line. You have to have guts to win finals, and Sevilla had the bigger guts.
I agree with you, Michael Oud. Well said. Great job today as well. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody out there. Thank you so much to everybody who jumped in the conversation. A lot of people saying that it would be a great move for Jose Mourinho to move to Paris. Matt jumping in and saying Mourinho would have so many players and to scapegoat in Paris. He'd be in heaven right there. If Messi wasn't leaving Paris before, he definitely will now with Jose Mourinho coming to town. Absolutely fantastic. Great comments from everybody there. Thank you so much to everybody for jumping in the comments. We appreciate you. And to everybody out there who's listening to House of Champions, take a minute to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere else you listen to your podcast. We're also available as video, so subscribe to us on YouTube. Don't forget, everybody, we will be back again tomorrow with the legendary Fabrizio Romano as the transfer rumors are heating up big time. We'll also have a quick look at the FA Cup final. I might also have a little peek at the German Cup final, which is coming up this weekend between Leipzig and Frankfurt. But of course, the Manchester Derby in a final is going to take preference. Of course it is. Mike, real quickly before we do go, I know we're going to discuss it again tomorrow, but real quickly, Man United, can they beat City in a final?
There's always a chance in hell. Maybe. Of course they can. I'm a United fan. Of course they're going to beat City. Come on, United. Maybe.
That's all I was looking for. I just needed Michael Oud to say that on camera. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate you. Michael Oud, appreciate you as well. See everybody tomorrow. Don't forget to join us 9 a.m. Eastern with Fabrizio Romano. See you then.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.